I have with me today just a couple of items to kind of get us in the right frame of mind. The first one is a placemat. I don't know about you guys, but I need placemats. In fact, normally when I have a placemat, or if I have just a plate, there's usually splatter, crumbs, spills, whatever it is, that perfectly outline either the plate or the placemat. I tend to be a, I don't know what kind of eater you would call that, but I tend to sort of get into my food, I suppose. It's sort of everywhere when by the time I'm finished. I'm not quite sure how that happens, but it just seems to happen that way. The other is a napkin, okay? Common, ordinary napkin, I suppose. I actually have a napkin with me wherever I go on Sundays. I just call it a tie. It seems to catch everything that I spill. I don't know what it is about napkins, but my food seems to avoid the napkins, unless I'm wiping my mouth with it. But it's just something that we knew, that we do. We kind of take them for granted sometimes, too, don't we? It's just ordinary things. We use paper napkins, to wipe our mouths with, to keep our clothing from getting soiled. Common, ordinary dinner things that we use. And it's kind of interesting to me as you look at Jesus and his life, especially in Luke 14. But Jesus had a lot to say around dinner times. He ate meals with a lot of people. People invited him into their homes to have meals. And think about how much of a social life you have surrounded by meals times, by eating. I think one of the concerns that our society has today is that a lot of times we're eating out. People aren't eating at home, although perhaps with the economy the way it is, people are realizing, you know what, you can kind of eat at home a little cheaper. And quite frankly, Janet and I discovered you can eat at home a lot better. You can eat better food. And mealtimes become very important. Jesus had a lot to say about meals. He criticized those who insisted that you had to wash your hands before you eat. It was more of a religious ritual for them. Now, we do it for health reasons and probably should. But the fact is, it wasn't some religious duty that made people have to wash their hands. It wasn't about that. It wasn't what made people unclean. Certainly, conversations at meals were teaching moments for Jesus. And that's what we see here in Luke chapter 14. The section actually begins with a challenge during one meal that we can and should do good on the Sabbath. Luke chapter 14, 1 through 6. We didn't read that section today, but Jesus challenges his listeners during a mealtime conversation about that. Should we do good on the Sabbath? Well, he says, well, you do it all the time. You know, if somebody gets hurt or an ox falls into a ditch and it's the Sabbath, you don't leave them there because it's the Sabbath. It just makes sense. You go and you help them out. Well, what else do we learn from Jesus' dinner conversations? Sitting around the table in conversation, in a relaxed atmosphere. We learn that Jesus says a lot of things to people during those times. And he reaches certain conclusions during some of those little lessons that he gives. Let's look at a couple of them this morning. The first one is the parable of the wedding feast. Actually, I guess our markers here sort of give us a differentiation between the wedding feast and the great banquet that Jesus talks about later on. Well, Jesus has this little discussion, and he apparently noted when he walked into this particular mealtime that everybody tried to sit in the best seats, near the head of the table, I would assume, like we might think of today. You know, you want to sit at the best seats because you think you're the person of honor. And Jesus sees them taking the places of honor. And he says, you know, you might want to rethink that. What you may want to do, in fact, not might want to do, he says, what you should do is take the place of least honor. Now, this was not the usual practice, as Jesus himself noted. He watched the guests jockeying for the places of honor. Matthew 23, verses 5 through 6, perhaps reflects a common practice among this particular group of individuals. Matthew 23, verses 5 and 6, we see that they do all their deeds to be seen by others. They make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long, and they love the places of honor at feasts. There were apparently people that this was just sort of their common practice. And they want to be recognized. They want to be seen. And so they do everything to make themselves look good. One of them was, well, I got to be sitting at the place of honor. Otherwise, I'm humbled. Well, and in fact, you see what Jesus does here. He says, well, you know what? That's where you need to be. You need to be in a place of humility. James chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, seems to indicate, even by the time the church has been established, that this was still a difficult worldly attitude to expel. Where in James, James talks about showing partiality to people because they have wealth. He says, you don't do that. You don't give the places of honor just to the people because they're wealthy. And so, even by the time the church is still active and growing, they're struggling with this particular attitude. They're still having to be reminded that this is not an attitude that's appropriate in the kingdom of God. And Jesus basically says, don't assume your own sense of self-importance. When you go to a feast, don't just look for the place of honor. Don't assume that you're the guy that everybody wants to be next to. Listen to what the Apostle Paul will tell the church in the book of Romans, chapter 12 and verse 3. Later on, again, the church is established by this time, but they still need these little reminders. Here's what Paul says. For the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. Interesting statement in light of what Jesus said, isn't it? In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 3, he says this, for if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. Inflated egos are not welcome in the kingdom of God. Well, let me say that differently. They're not acceptable in the kingdom of God. We welcome them. We're happy to have people, no matter what their egos are. But the fact is, it's something that we learn to do differently. Jesus concludes by simply saying, he who humbles himself will be exalted, and he who exalts himself will be humbled. If you've ever wondered how it is that humility has come to be such a prized virtue in Christianity, here's the reason right here. Jesus expects us to have it. But Jesus has some more lessons to teach us during this dinner conversation. And one of the things he says here is, in verses 12 through 14, is simply invite those who can't pay you back. Now, he's already talked about us being humble. Now he says, when you have a feast, invite the humble. Invite the lowly. Invite those who are not the important people in the community. There is an expectation that I think people often have of being paid back. As above, Jesus addresses what is a kind of common societal assumption. Well, if I invite somebody over to my house, I'm expected that they're going to invite me over to their house. And people feel this way all the time. They feel this expectation that, oh, well, you know, I guess it's my turn to have people over. And, you know, it's kind of okay. I mean, there's nothing so much wrong with it. Unless we're always expecting to be repaid or rewarded in some way. If we're inviting people over with the expectation they're going to pay us back, that's not much of a sacrifice, is it? It's not much on our part. It's not much of us giving ourselves. We sometimes feel obligated to repay people for their kindness. It may create a strong link in certain societies, but it's not really kingdom behavior. Jesus is saying something here that's really stark, really dramatically different than the way society often goes about its business. Jesus says, invite those who can't pay you back. That's what you're supposed to do. When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friend or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they invite you in return and you be repaid. When you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Now, if you're like me, you're probably sitting here thinking, well, I don't really do that very much. And I'm expecting that's probably the case for most of us. We just don't. But that's what Jesus says to do. You see, the kingdom of God is different. You must not expect to be repaid. And you must relieve yourself of this expectation of repayment and do something totally different. Now, Jesus does say, you'll be repaid, won't you? But you will be repaid after resurrection. You're not going to get repaid in this life. And that's what we usually expect. Delay the gratification of receiving back. That's basically what Jesus is telling us here. But I guess I kind of want to use this as a challenge for us. As a church, how can we do this? How can we think about ways of inviting those who can't pay us back and offering them a meal? Is it a matter for us to maybe stop and rethink our fellowship meal, which is good? How can we do what Jesus says here with our fellowship meal? Is there some different way we can handle it? Several weeks ago, I mentioned that, you know, we ought to be thinking about how we can be less meeting-oriented and more ministry-oriented. Maybe this is one way. And I'm just suggesting here that maybe we figure out a way to institute what Jesus says here, not because we expect to get any glory out of it, not because we expect to be repaid by society because of it, but because it's simply what Jesus told us to do. Can our present fellowship meal be transformed in such a way that we fulfill this command? No pun intended, but I hope this gives us some food for thought. Something to think about. How can we do this? The last thing that Jesus has to say in this dinner conversation is about another banquet. And I sort of entitled this section, Your Affairs Versus the Kingdom of God, because that really is what it amounts to here. But it's at a dinner that Jesus talks about another great feast. In fact, his discussion is actually prompted by someone bringing the issue up. There was an expectation among the Jews that there would be a great feast in the kingdom of God. And some person says, blessed is everyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of God. And so Jesus tells the story. He tells the story about a great banquet, or the great banquet. He doesn't deny that there's a great banquet. He tells a story about this great banquet, which really represents the reality of the situation. It is a story about those who will, in fact, participate in it. Yes, indeed, blessed are those who will participate in the great banquet, but who are going to be the ones who get to eat there? It is interesting. It is described as a feast, a great celebration. We know, unfortunately, that not everyone will be able to participate. And maybe I should say that differently, too. It's not because they won't be able to. It's because they choose not to. Many people refuse the invitation. Sounds pretty shocking. To refuse an invitation. But Jesus tells the story about a man who's having a great feast. And he tells the story about all the excuses that people come up with not to attend. Business gets in the way. One has a field. One has a set of oxen he's just bought. And I kind of wonder if we can't throw in there, for contemporary purposes, recreational activities get in the way. All the things that we want to do to have fun with are here. Certainly business expense, business things get in the way. I'm conducting business, and business is important because I have to make money for myself and I have to tend to my business affairs. Here it gets in the way. Here it's something that becomes more important than participating in the kingdom of God. And if business matters don't get in the way, perhaps there are personal matters that get in the way. I've always thought there's a little bit of irony here because the guy says, well, I just married a wife. And my first thought is, well, isn't she invited too? I would only assume that she would be invited. Maybe my assumption is wrong there. How can he use that as an excuse? Well, she doesn't want to come. She's not invited. I don't know. It just strikes me as a little odd there. But maybe it's just finding an excuse. Whatever personal matter it might be, you know, maybe this to me is a little bit of a reach in finding an excuse. Because I would only guess that the wife was also invited, but he uses it as an excuse not to come. The common ground here seems to be that we consider mundane, everyday matters more important than spiritual matters. And it's typical of the world, isn't it? We've reversed the order of things. We said these are the things that are really important. These are the things that are more important than spiritual matters. And you see, this whole discussion that Jesus is having is really about participation in kingdom activities. And we can't just sugarcoat all our excuses. We can't just give excuses all the time for not participating. Jesus makes that very clear. And he draws a very stark conclusion here. I get the impression the person who's holding the feast, he's very angry. But he does take action. Number one, those originally invited, they will not get to eat in the kingdom of God. There's probably a veiled reference here to the Pharisees and the people that Jesus is eating with. You guys aren't going to get to come because you don't know anything about participation in the kingdom of God. He's already told them several things that they're doing wrong and they're not even taking it to heart. But the master goes to the trouble to say, all right, you guys don't want to come? I want my house filled. And so he goes out and he does basically what Jesus tells us to do. He goes out and he invites the lame, the blind, those people who can't pay him back. Those people who may not even been his closest friends. Simply because he wants his house filled. He wants to give this feast. And he wants it to be a celebration. And he invites people who weren't originally invited just so the celebration can go on. I don't know about you, but you might want to put yourself in the place of the people who were the lame and the blind. How good do you feel that, hey, I got to go? I wasn't invited, but I still got to go. You might feel pretty good about it. There are people with no worldly ties. And can we say they kind of had nothing better to do? They didn't have a business that was tying them down. They didn't have all these personal matters that were getting in the way, or they weren't using them in such a way. They were willing to come and enjoy the feast. Those are the ones who get to enjoy the feast in the kingdom of God. It's a challenging parable that Jesus tells. It's thought-provoking. And maybe it is that it's one of those things that we need to keep in mind all the time, that we can't assume that perhaps we're always going to make it there. We have to be willing ourselves to participate always and put our priorities in order, that we see what's really important and continue to live by those things that are the most important things, and that is taking care of spiritual matters, not just our worldly matters. There are some simple conclusions. I've already given them. Number one is humble yourself and you'll be exalted. Humble yourself before others. Humble yourself before God. Walk in humility before God. Not assuming that you know all the answers. Not assuming that everything you do is important. But rather, humble yourself before God. You will be exalted if you do that. Number two is give without expecting to get back. Wayne's suggestion at the Lord's Supper, I think, was quite relevant. Give without trying to make a big show of it. Give because you're supposed to do that, not because you expect society at large to say, okay, gee, you're doing a great job, and okay, we'll pay you back. That's not why we give. That's not the motivation. Give without expecting to receive back. God will bless you. He may bless you in ways that you don't realize, but he will, in fact, bless you. And you may even have to wait until you get blessed at the resurrection. But you will be blessed there for sure. And finally, participate in kingdom activities. You know, we can only prioritize those mundane things. And I call them mundane. Making a living is not really mundane. Getting our education is not mundane. Doing all these other things is not so much mundane. In fact, sometimes, in some ways, God blesses those activities. He's given us work to do. He's given us jobs. We're going to be talking a little bit about Labor Day next week. God's given us work, and it's important for us to find what our calling is. But isn't it easy to take those things that are good things and make them into priorities that kind of get in the way of spiritual matters? Goodness knows, recreational activities are good things. But we let them get in the way. They become our priority. They become the thing that guides and directs our very lives. And the very thing that we make our decisions around. It should be the other way around. It should be kingdom things that we use to make our decisions around that. And that's really what God is calling us to do. That's what made the master so angry, that people didn't do that. The kingdom and the feast in the kingdom of God await. They are, in fact, being prepared, I think, even as we speak. Maybe God's already got it ready. Maybe the meal's warm and he's waiting for us. The fact is, don't refuse the invitation to be a part of the kingdom of God. It's really a simple thing. God calls us to be a part of the kingdom of God by sending his son Jesus to be a part of our lives, by asking us to believe in him, by asking us simply to live our lives with our belief in him. When we begin that by being baptized for remission of sins. But that's only the beginning. The beginning puts us on the road to being faithful to kingdom activities for the rest of our lives. That's the invitation. That's what we call people to. That's what we're trying to do in this place. Humble yourself. Don't expect to be repaid. And always put your priorities for spiritual matters in the first place. Let's continue to do that all of our lives. Eric, let's stand and sing.